Hello and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Mario Cahar, and today I'll be reading from the New Britain Herald newspaper, the PetMD website, the Pet Radar website, and the DogTime.com website. First up, we have an article by Jessica Fontaine for the New Britain Herald titled, Pushing to Punish Animal Abusers. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal this week visited the Connecticut Humane Society in Newington to introduce Goldie's Act, a new piece of legislation that aims to protect dogs in so-called puppy mills. The bill, which Blumenthal co-sponsored with Senator Rick Scott of Florida and introduced on March 21st, would update the Animal Welfare Act to ensure the U.S. Department of Agriculture enforces laws already on the books and issue fines. The bill accompanies legislation introduced in the House of Representatives last year. The legislation will require the USDA to conduct more frequent inspections, provide life-saving intervention for suffering animals, issue penalties for violation of the Animal Welfare Act, and communicate with local law enforcement to address cruelty and neglect, according to Nancy Perry, Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the ASPCA. We have to face an industry, the puppy mill industry, that is well-financed and resistant to this law, Blumenthal said. The bipartisan bill stemmed from the USDA's failure to enforce the law, impose violation, and care for Goldie, a golden retriever in Iowa who was found emaciated, according to Blumenthal. Goldie's law aims to bring out the best in this industry of providing dogs and other pets to people who genuinely want to care for them, Senator Blumenthal said. This act underscores the importance of recognizing animal cruelty and providing frequent inspections at these USDA-licensed facilities, said James Bias, executive director of the Connecticut Humane Society. I've seen firsthand facilities that go for years without any type of inspection and then no follow-through. In 2022, the USDA found 800 violations and issued zero penalties. The law would require that violations involve a penalty of $10,000 per dog, regular inspections of breeders, researchers, and exhibitors, and a rigorous enforcement regimen that will protect the animals and deter illegal treatment. This bill should not be necessary, but we know abuse occurs and we know there's a need for this law, said Senator Blumenthal. The USDA has failed to enforce the law, allowing violations to go unreported and unpunished for decades, according to Perry. In 2023, federal inspectors documented over 1,000 violations per commercial dog dealer at over 400 facilities and only took enforcement action against 4 dog dealers. Despite overwhelming evidence of animal cruelty, the USDA again and again chooses to do nothing. They don't revoke licenses, they don't issue fines, and they don't even remove suffering animals, said Perry. Attorney Colette Griffin of CT Votes for Animals said, and I quote, "Unfortunately, Goldie, who had a short lifetime of suffering, was not an exception as many thousands like her suffer in silence," end quote. The act will help ensure that dogs in USDA-regulated facilities will not suffer or die tragically like Goldie did, said Griffin. And here's an editor's note. This article refers to legal USDA-licensed dog breeding facilities, not the unlicensed illegal puppy mills, which unfortunately exist in many parts of the country. You're listening to the Magazine Rack on Chris. The next article is also from the New Britain Herald. It's an editorial by Robin Ganzert, and it's titled, Congress Should Throw Service Dog Programs a Bone. Congress has averted another government shutdown, but often lost in the shuffle during these multi-trillion-dollar budget battles are appropriations for life-saving veteran programs that employ wagging tails to heal invisible wounds of war. Policymakers should consider throwing these types of initiatives a bigger financial bone. Current funding for veteran service dog initiatives is scant. For example, the 2021 Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members, or PAWS for Veterans Therapy Act, created a 5-year pilot program in select cities where service dogs would be implemented into veteran treatment programs. However, the initiative has been plagued with funding hiccups, and eligibility remains extremely limited. Although good in theory, the program has so far fallen short. More veterans need help now, not years down the line. Veterans are navigating a crisis of epic proportions. Untreated or undertreated mental health conditions are leading former service members to an early grave. In a particularly sobering statistic, more veterans have died of suicide than from combat since the September 11th terrorist attacks. Meanwhile, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs, 24 former military members take their lives every day. A growing body of research confirms what former service members have anecdotally said for years. Specially trained service dogs can act as a lifeline in these cases. A wagging tail can play a significant role in helping veterans recover and readjust to a more normal life after returning from the battlefield. A 2022 study published in Frontiers in Psychiatry found that veterans, as well as first responders, suffering from post-traumatic stress demonstrated fewer symptoms when accompanied by service dogs. In addition to companionship and emotional support, these animals can help detect and then interrupt flashback episodes, stopping panic attacks, intense shaking, and heart palpitations early on. At American Humane, we've seen firsthand how service dogs can benefit former men and women in uniform. Through the Pups for Patriots program, dogs in search of forever homes are trained to be life-saving service animals for veterans suffering from the mental wounds of war, and they're all free to the veterans. Success stories are plentiful. Last year, for example, an Army veteran who participated in the program could graduate from college after being paired with a life-saving service dog. Unfortunately, the current level of government resources committed to programs like these, even when combined with the generous support of private donors, just isn't cutting it. The problem is just too big. Fortunately, a path forward has already been introduced. The Service Dogs Assisting Veterans Act is legislation establishing an annual $10 million grant program to support nonprofit organizations that train and pair service dogs with veterans. It is through private-public partnerships like these that we can truly make a difference in the lives of veterans struggling with mental health. Lawmakers in Washington continuously butt heads about funding the federal government. Amid the debate, Congress should consider appropriating a small fraction of that money to provide veterans with a healing leash. In the grand scheme of a $6 trillion federal budget, it's a small price to pay to save heroes in uniform. And an editor's note, Robin Gansert is the president and CEO of American Humane. She wrote this for InsideSources.com, and it was published in the April 4th edition of the New Britain Herald. You're in tune with the Magazine Rack. I'm Chris. Next is an editorial titled, Are You Ready for Flea and Tick Season? The spring and summer months are peak flea and tick season in many parts of the U.S. Although the insects thrive in tall grass and wooded areas, you may also find them in your backyard. Luckily, reducing your pet's risk of a flea or tick-borne illness can be as simple as taking a few of these preventative steps. First, treat your backyard. Use flea and tick spray on grass, shrubs, and plants to kill fleas and ticks. Products that promise to kill both adult fleas, ticks, eggs, and larvae offer the best protection. By the way, and this is important, keep your pets out of the yard until the spray dries completely. Most products only keep your yard flea and tick free for about a month and then require regular reapplications. It's also important to make your yard offer less hospitality to fleas and ticks. Begin by thatching your lawn to remove the layer of dead grass, roots, and stems that form between the soil and the grass. Thatch provides the ideal breeding ground for fleas. Do you have piles of leaves or wood on your property? You may have unknowingly created the perfect flea habitat. Clearing debris and brush may prevent fleas and ticks from invading your yard. Cutting your grass too high or too low can also be a factor in preventing fleas. Fleas hide in tall grass and then jump onto the nearest warm body that passes by, whether that's you or your pet. Unfortunately, too short grass also poses a problem. When grass is short, the spiders and ants that provide natural flea control will move out. So, how short is too short? The lawn care company Scotts says that it's best to keep your grass at least 2 inches high. Next, protect your pet. Topical and oral flea and tick medication, sprays, shampoos, and dips offer additional protection for pets. The products kill adult fleas and ticks and stop the development of larvae and eggs. Check with your pet's veterinarian, though, before using one of these products for the first time, especially if your pet is very young, old, or has a chronic health condition. Next, keep critters out of your yard. Raccoons, possums, deer, and your neighbor's dogs or cats can bring fleas onto your property. If your yard isn't already fenced, consider building a solid fence to prevent flea-ridden animals from infesting your yard. Check fence slats regularly for holes or signs of rot. Check your pet for ticks and fleas regularly. Perform a tick check every time your pet returns inside after spending time outdoors. Start the check by running your hands over your dog or cat's head and body. As you perform the tick check, take a closer look at any unusual bumps. They may actually be ticks engorged with your pet's blood. It can take up to 24 hours or longer for attached ticks to transmit diseases to your pet, so removing ticks as soon as possible is essential for your furry friend's health. And don't forget to check your pet's paws and ears also. Remove ticks with tweezers, then kill them by placing them in a jar filled with alcohol. You may want to keep the sealed jar for a few weeks. If your dog or cat develops a rash or other possible Lyme disease symptoms in the coming weeks, your pet's veterinarian may want to test those ticks. Pull the tick straight out of your pet's body without twisting or crushing it. And remember to be sure to wear rubber or latex gloves during the procedure. If your dog or cat has fleas, you may notice frequent scratching, licking, or biting of the skin, bald or hot spots, deposits that look like dirt in your pet's fur, white flea eggs, or patches of red skin. Unnaturally pale gums or lips may be a sign of anemia, which can occur if your pet has a severe flea infestation. Anemia requires immediate veterinary treatment to protect your pet's health. And now a word about other pets. Your rabbit, guinea pig, hamster, or gerbil may never spend any time outdoors, but it can still have a flea problem. Small animals often develop fleas if other animals are infested or you unwittingly bring fleas inside on your clothing. Flea and tick bites can cause Lyme disease, skin infections, and other health problems. Check with your veterinarian if you're concerned about your pet's symptoms or you need recommendations for effective flea and tick treatments for your home and your yard. You're tuned in to the Magazine Rack on Chris. Now we have an article by Adam England titled, "Trainer Suggests Feeding Your Dog from Your Plate When You're Out and About." And it's not the advice we expected. When you're outside in public with your dog, you might find yourself faced with some challenges that you won't have at home. There's more going on and more things happening that might tempt your pup to ignore you, run off, or pull on their leash. So, what can you do to invite desirable behavior besides bringing out one of the best dog toys? Well, that'll depend on the scenario and where you are, but as Juliana DeWillems, an expert trainer and the founder of JW Dog Training and Behavior, has explained in a recent Instagram post, feeding your pup from the table when you're enjoying food outside can be a good way to encourage them to behave. Being outside in public comes with very challenging scenarios and distractions, DeWillams says. bites from my plate are extra high value and exciting, so they are more likely to compete with everything going on around us. I am very thoughtful about when I give my dog a small bite, which allows me to reinforce particular behaviors that I want to see more of. Plus, my dog thinks it's the best thing ever, so she leaves with a positive experience. Win-win. It can be frustrating if your pup doesn't seem to want to cooperate with you when you're out and about, but it can be difficult for dogs when there are so many exciting things on offer to distract them. Rather than directing our frustration at our dogs, it's best to make ourselves more desirable, so it's in their best interest to stick around. Of course, if you're out with your dog but you aren't getting food, for instance, maybe you're at the park or outside at a party or a family gathering, you could always make sure you have some tasty dog treats in your pocket instead, and they'll work in much the same way. Now, what human foods can dogs eat? While it might go without saying, ensure that the food on your plate is actually safe for your dog to eat. You don't need an emergency trip to the veterinarian or your dog throwing up when all you wanted was just a relaxing afternoon. You're listening to the Magazine Rack on Chris. The next article is by veterinarians Dr. Katie Gribb and Dr. Sandra C. Mitchell. And it's titled, How to Get Rid of Cat Pee Smell. If your cat pees outside the litter box, the smell can be difficult to get rid of. Whether your cat pees on the carpet, a piece of furniture, bed linen, or your clothes, it's important to neutralize the odor to prevent your cat from becoming a repeat offender. The reason is that cats often return to a spot where they have previously peed if the odor is not eliminated. So, here's how to get rid of that cat pee smell. First of all, what does it smell like? Cat pee smells like an offensive ammonia odor. Some say that cat pee smells like juniper trees, white spruce trees, mangoes, or even basil. After a cat urinates, the bacteria in the urine decomposes and gives off that ammonia-like odor that's characteristic of old stale urine. The odor gets worse with time as the urine begins emitting mercaptans, which are the same compounds that give skunk spray its characteristic bad smell. Male cats, by the way, that haven't been neutered have an even more powerful stench, thanks to powerful hormones they eliminate when they pee. So here are some cleaning products to remove cat pee smell. Several products can help neutralize cat pee odor, including vinegar, baking soda, or store-bought cleaners. Here are some options to help you get rid of that smell. First are enzyme-based cleaners. The enzymes in these products actually break down the acid in cat urine and get rid of the smell. These products, like Nature's Miracle, for instance, are usually the most effective in removing all traces of cat urine. Another solution is baking soda and vinegar. Vinegar is an acid that neutralizes the alkaline salts that form in dried cat urine stains. A solution of one part water and one part vinegar can be used to clean walls and floors. When you're trying to get rid of cat pee smell, don't use any commercial cleaning products that contain ammonia. This is important. Ammonia is one component of cat urine, and if the cats smell it, they're more likely to pee there again, says veterinarian Dr. Bruce Kornreich, Senior Associate Director of the Cornell Feline Health Center. In addition, ammonia and other chemical cleaners can often set the stain, which is the exact opposite of what you're trying to do. By the way, be sure your pet isn't around while you're doing the cleaning, and that all areas are totally dry before your pet comes into contact with them again. Now, here's how to get cat pee smell out of a carpet. As bad as cat pee initially smells, the longer that urine sits, the worse the stench becomes. The smell gets more concentrated over time, says Dr. Kornreich. Additionally, once a urine stain dries, you may no longer see it without using a black light to detect it. But you can still smell it, and soak in your cat, which can lead them to pee in that area again. So, to get cat pee smell out of a carpet, first, locate the stain as soon as possible and blot up as much of the urine as you can with a clean cloth. Next, rinse the area with clean water and remove the liquid with a wet, dry vacuum. Don't use a steam cleaner, as the heat can set the stain. Generously wet the area with your cleaner, and then let the cleaner sit for 10 to 15 minutes. After that, blot the spot again with a clean cloth. Cover the area until it's completely dry. And for older stains, or particularly smelly stains, you may need to reapply the cleaner, so repeat steps 3 and 4. And now, here are a few easy steps you can take to remove the cat pee smell from a cushion. Soak the affected area of the cushion with water, and then blot up as much of the cat urine as possible with a towel. Soak the cushion by pouring the enzyme cleaner on and around the affected area. Let the solution sit for about 15 minutes. Blot the cushion with a towel, removing as much of the liquid as possible. And by the way, keep your cat away from the area until it's completely dry. And now, here's how to remove cat pee smell from a mattress. Mattresses require about the same process as cushions. First, blot up as much of the cat urine as possible with an old towel. Then, soak the mattress by pouring or generously spraying the enzyme cleaner on and around the affected area. Let the enzymatic cleaner sit for 15 minutes and then blot it up. Let the mattress dry. If it's not dry by the time you go to bed, place several layers of clean towels over the spot and make the bed over it. Swap out the towels each day until the mattress completely dries. Mattresses may require several applications to completely remove the cat urine. Now, here's how to remove pee smell from clothing. First, rinse the spot in a sink with cold water. Then, add the clothing items to the washing machine. Along with your normal laundry detergent, use 1 cup of baking soda or 1/4 cup of vinegar. If you can still smell the urine after the wash cycle is complete, add an enzyme cleaner to the load and run the clothing through the wash one more time. Allow your clothing to air dry, as the heat of the dryer may lock in the smell before it's completely gone. And by the way, you may need to rewash your clothing a few times until that scent is completely gone. And here's how to get cat pee smell out of wood. If your cat pees on an area of sealed wood, like a wooden floor, baseboards, or wooden furniture, cleanup is pretty straightforward. Spot cleaning the area with water and a damp sponge may be all that's necessary. For dried patches or stubborn areas, spot cleaning followed by an enzymatic cleaner is needed. Allow the cleaner to sit on the area for the time recommended on your product's packaging and then wipe it clean. Clean the area again using a sponge and plain water. And finally, dry the area thoroughly. This is the Magazine Rack on Chris. Now we have an article by veterinarian Dr. Elizabeth Racine titled, "When Should I Stop Feeding My Dog Puppy Food?" Here's what a vet has to say. When should I stop feeding my dog puppy food? This is a question that a lot of new pet parents have, but the answer isn't always so obvious. As your furry friend gets older, you might notice changes in their behavior and energy levels, which might make you think that it's time to reassess their diet. At some point in time, your little one will need to make the switch from the best puppy food to the best dog food. But how do you know when they're ready? Unfortunately, this isn't a straightforward answer, since it depends on their breed. Now, you might have heard that dogs are mature by the age of 1. However, large and giant breeds can actually take between 18 months and 2 years to reach full development, and small dog breeds can take just 9 months. Before you start switching your dog's diet up, you need to wait until they've reached musculoskeletal maturity. That means when they've stopped growing and the growth plates in their bones have closed. If you're not sure when that is, and you want to learn how to transition into dog food safely, well, then you're in good hands, because we've rounded up everything you need to know, from when you should change their food, how much you should be feeding them, and everything in between. So first, are there significant differences between puppy food and adult food? Your puppy should eat a commercial diet that's specifically formulated for puppies. Growing puppies have different nutritional needs than adult dogs, and puppy food is formulated to meet those needs. Puppy diets tend to be higher in calories to support growth and have a different balance of vitamins and minerals to provide optimal nutrition for growing bones and muscles. Most veterinary nutritionists do not recommend homemade, raw, or adult dog food diets for puppies because these diets don't provide the right balance of nutrients to support rapid growth and may lead to developmental abnormalities. While feeding puppy food to an adult is less risky than feeding adult food to a puppy, there are still concerns with feeding an adult dog a diet that doesn't match his current life stage. Puppy diets are often higher in calories than adult food in order to support rapid growth, and this can lead to rapid weight gain in adults, especially in spayed or neutered dogs. So, when should I stop feeding my dog puppy food? The exact timing of the transition from puppy food to adult food will depend on a few individual factors: your puppy's age, breed, expected adult size, and current health status should all be taken into account. In most cases, you should wait until your dog is fully grown before transitioning to an adult diet. Small and medium breed dogs typically finish growing at around 8 months to 1 year of age, while large and giant breeds may not reach their full adult size until 18 months of age. If you're uncertain when your dog will be fully grown, a good rule of thumb is to wait until your dog is 1 year of age before transitioning over to an adult diet. Some dogs may need to transition even earlier if they have medical problems that can be managed with diet, such as food allergies or digestive problems. Once again, your veterinarian is a great resource to help you decide the best time to make the transition and can also recommend adult dog foods to meet your dog's individual needs. This is the Magazine Rack on Chris. Finally, we have an article by Elizabeth Claire Alberts titled, "World's Oldest Recorded Pet Door is Still Open to Cats 400 Years Later." Given the choice, most cats like to roam around outside. But how does one avoid becoming a cat's personal porter, letting them in and out every time they scratch at the door? Well, that's simple. Install a pet door. Even 400 years ago, people had the same idea. At Exeter Cathedral in the United Kingdom, an old door leading to a large astronomical clock has a round, cat-shaped hole carved out of the wood. Historical records indicate that a bishop named William Cotton instructed carpenters to install the door in 1598. Why? Probably so his cat could catch mice and rats, says author and historian Diane Walker. Walker explains that rodents were drawn to the cathedral because of the animal fat used to lubricate the clock's mechanism. The idea that the hole was cut to enable the bishop's cat to catch mice in the space where the clock mechanism was located does lead to a rethink of the "Hickory Dickory Dock, the Mouse Ran Up the Clock" nursery rhyme, Walker told Hyperallergic. By the way, a personal door wasn't the only luxury for cathedral cats. Records also indicate that they got salaries. Back in the 14th and 15th centuries, we have records in the cathedral of payments of 13 pence every 3 months for the cat and occasionally 26 pence every 3 months for the cat, Walker told BBC. Now, we don't know if that was double rations because they had been doing a good job or whether there were actually two cats, she added. Now, while it's possible that there are even older cat doors, Walker says she likes to think that Exeter Cathedral is one of the earliest. By the way, even now, cats continue to use this ancient cat door. The cathedral's current resident, a cat named Audrey, makes frequent use of the cat door, and we have a picture of Audrey, who is a very, very cute tan and white tabby, looking out through the cat door. But one thing has changed. Sadly, the cathedral cats no longer receive salaries. Maybe they should unionize them. And that'll do it for this installment of the Magazine Rack on Chris. I've been reading from the New Britain Herald, the PetMD website, the Pet Radar website, and the DogTime.com website. I'm Mario Cahar. So long till next time.